Well, Mike, I'm an alcoholic, and thanks for having me. And my sobriety date is July 29, 2002, and I have a sponsor and a home group, and honestly, I haven't spoken for an hour before. I've only done half-hour talks, which means I do our half-hour long talks, so it should be interesting how, you know, see how long I can go. But I certainly didn't have a very riveting story either. It's pretty, I guess, mediocre, I guess, you know, but it was definitely a lot of drinking, a lot of destroyed relationships, so it's definitely very alcoholic, just not one of those, you know, crazy, wild stories. But I grew up in McLean. I mean, I lived a few different places when I was real young, but most of my life was spent living in McLean, Virginia, and, you know, I had two very great parents. I had two older brothers who were a lot older than me, so, you know, I was never, like, really close to my brothers. They were definitely, you know, like, they were out of high school before I was even in middle school, you know, and so, but needless to say, I still had a very, very good upbringing. I mean, you know, parents had provided everything I needed and a lot of the things I wanted, and you know, I never really seemed to have any problems in life yet. But yet, it started around, somewhere around 6, 7, 8 years old, somewhere around there, I just, for some reason, started getting pretty depressed. I don't know. I was just getting kind of miserable. Like I said, I had no real reason for it. I just was. And somewhere around that time, I carved into my bedpost, "I hate life. I want to die." So, which is a little weird. You know, looking back on it now, I'm like, most kids are probably not like that. But my parents, I don't think they were, well, I don't know if they ever found out, but they at least never said anything about it. But as I was growing up, I mean, I was watching my oldest brother wasn't too much of a partier, but my middle brother was a lot more, and plus, my middle brother was a little bit closer in age to me, so I watched him a little bit more, and I understood a little more of what he was like, and find out he'd been parties and had been drinking and doing drugs and stuff like that, and so something about it just kind of, and I could tell that he was having fun with all that stuff, you know, so it already kind of set the stage for, you know, being interested in it, and so it's not like I went out and got drunk that, you know, right then, but I was age 11, and it was like just after I turned 11, and I walked past my brother's room, and he pulled me into his room, and he told me, he handed me a bottle, or a handle of Jim Beam, and he told me to take a swig of it, and I took a swig of it, and I didn't have any more that day, but to this day, I can still remember the burn as it went down, you know, I got the sweat on my brow, and I just got hot all over, and just something about it. I mean, I was already interested, and that just sparked it even more, and all of a sudden, it was like, I had to try more, and, but I, like I said, I didn't, like, grab the bottle from it and start chugging it down or like that, but but later that year, it was New Year's, and, I came home at, like, 12:15, just, I was at this guy that lived down the street from me, it's his house, my parents were out of town, so my brother was having a little party at our house, and, he handed me a beer, and he told me to start drinking, and of course, I was like, hell yeah, I'm excited about this. So I definitely got drunk that night, and that was definitely, I can tell you, from that day until today, my life has been entirely different because of that. I don't know if necessarily it was like immediately I was an alcoholic, but it certainly, had an alcoholic type effect, you know, because it definitely seemed to cure every last little negative emotion I had in me right at that moment. All of a sudden, I felt great. I mean, I was 11 years old, and these kids were 17, 18-year-old kids, and I felt like I was the life of the party. I was, you know, having a great time, you know, and I was joking around with them, and it was definitely a complete 180-degree change in how I normally acted, because normally I was a very shy, quiet kid. I didn't have a whole lot of friends. I was constantly worried about what people thought about me, and I'm just... everything negative you could think of, that's what I thought about, you know, and so it put a smile on my face, and it made me feel great, you know, so that's kind of what it made me more interested in, so, but I didn't start drinking daily at that moment or anything like that, but I definitely tried every moment I could, and so it happened to be every couple months or something like that, but And that was like the end of fifth grade or mid fifth grade or something like that. And so by the time I got into seventh grade, you know, that's when I started meeting other kids that were a little more interested in that stuff. And so I started doing it a little more frequently, you know, a couple times a month. You know, just kind of typical of some kids that are kind of bad at that age, I guess. So it was not like it was, like I said, not like it was alcoholic at that point. It's not like it had taken over my life and everything yet. But I certainly thought about it a lot, and I could definitely tell that, you know, at least if I was an alcoholic at that point, it was already starting. You know, I was already at the point where it might have been too late to turn back, just because it had already started to take, you know, more important of a role in my life than anything else. You know, I was playing sports and doing okay in school and all that stuff, and not that I like completely deteriorated right away, but I certainly didn't care as much anymore about that stuff. You know, by the time I got into high school, the only thing I was doing, I did a bunch of sport. You know, I was doing soccer and baseball and swimming and all that stuff. And by that point, the only thing I kept up with was swimming, because I was on the summer team, you know, and I ended up swimming for my high school. But it never really meant anything to me. I don't even know why I really kept up to it. I just kind of kept going for some reason. You know, that's when it really started, drinking took off for me. It was my freshman year of high school, and it was a couple weeks in, and that's where, or I was hanging out with some of the upperclassmen, and it was a Wednesday night, or Wednesday afternoon after school, and one of the guys was like, let's get some beer, and I remember my thought was the getting drunk in the middle of the week, why have I not done this before? And so, quite honestly, from that moment until I stopped drinking, I drank every day. And, it, you know, went that quickly for me. If I hadn't been alcoholic just yet, certainly at that point is when it became, I crossed that line. Because at that point, I already started destroying friendships, and, you know, my relationship with my parents was certainly strained. Everything about alcoholism had already kind of started at that point, you know. And but at that point, nothing, I didn't have any major consequences, you know. I mean, I certainly had, I forgot to mention that, you know, that first time I got drunk that night, I had blacked out, and I passed out. I passed out on the stairs as I was walking up. My brother had to carry me to bed, and I kind of like half woke up in the middle of the night, puked in my bed, and fell back asleep in it, and woke up the next morning and had the worst hangover I'd ever had in my whole drinking career. And yet, you know, I certainly didn't think, I'm not doing that again. I mean, my immediate reaction was, that was great. I did not care that, like, the next morning it felt terrible, because I just figured it was part of the game, you know. And that's kind of how it was for me the whole time I was drinking, that, you know, all these consequences, it just seemed like, you know, it doesn't matter, because once I have a drink, I feel better. And not that I would tell you that, but I knew it instinctively. You know, I just knew it intuitively that, you know, if I took a drink, I'd put a smile on my face. And so by that time when I was, you know, like I said, I was in ninth grade, I mean, I was, what, 15, 16, or 15, and I already knew that, you know, intuitively, that taking a drink would make me feel better. Didn't matter what the situation, taking a drink made me feel better. So, you know, that's definitely the point where alcohol started to really take over my life. Like I said, you know, not really many consequences besides some bad hangovers, and I hadn't really caught my parents or gotten in trouble with school or caught by the cops or anything like that yet. I ended up, the first time I got caught with the police was some friends and I had been, before we were driving, so I was certainly walking around and trying to be a bad kid, you know, but we went by this construction site and broke into one of the trailers, because it was February, it was snow out, so we broke into a trailer so we could drink and smoke weed and stuff like that, and 45 minutes later, you know, we're, like, getting ready to leave, and the cops show up, you know, it's, like, perfect timing, we're, like, walking away, and the cops show up, all they did was, and they just took us home. They didn't even take us to the court, you know, or the jail or anything, because we were 14, 15-year-old kids, and you know, it was like a very slap on the wrist. We ended up having to pay for the damages, you know, which wasn't much money. I mean, well, my parents paid for the damages, rather, I got inactive probation, which essentially just don't get in trouble and, you know, gets expunged, and so, you know, that didn't really mean, it certainly didn't faze me. I certainly didn't have the thought of I shouldn't be drinking and doing drugs, because it, you know, obviously leads to bad things. I mean, it was just another story under my belt, you know. But I, you know, slowly started getting caught by my parents, and you know, and at first I was, you know, it kind of got to me, and I felt like I was getting in trouble. But eventually, I started to not care as much anymore, and I started treating my parents worse and worse and worse, because they kept getting in the way of my drinking, you know. And so, you know, just, I mean, the fact that anybody who ever got in the way of my drinking, you know, you were out. And I didn't care who you were, whether you were my parents who tried to love me, whether you were a good friend, or were you, you know, somebody passing on the street. I didn't care who you were, you know. I just stopped caring about having any kind of relationship with those people, you know. So that's what happened with my parents mostly. I mean, now, you know, I didn't have a, you know, most of the people that I encountered were people at school, or people, I mean, there's plenty of people outside of school that I had spent time with, but they were, people were doing the exact same thing as I was. So most of the relationships I destroyed, or that I had, you know, there were actually any kind of meaningful I destroyed. And, you know, but like I said, I mean, at that early point, it wasn't like I completely destroyed it. It was certainly just a bad, you know, I was a bad kid. I was a nuisance to my parents. And, but it was getting, you know, kept escalating more, because, you know, I'd get in trouble. And then, you know, once I started driving when I was 16, that's when I decided, well, I just won't go home. You know, so I stopped going home frequently. You know, I'd be, you know, I'd just stay out all night, or maybe not come home for a day or two or something like that. And I didn't think much of it. You know, I certainly didn't call my parents to tell them where I was. I figured if I told them, then they'd want me to come home. So I just wouldn't tell them, you know. And, you know, not once thinking of, like, how they felt about the situation. I felt like, you know, they're just going to try to tell me that I got to come home. I can't be doing this stuff. So I was looking out for my own interest in that situation, you know. And, but then even with... And then it slowly started happening more of that with my friends as well. You know, some of the guys that I had kind of grown up with, that were, I mean, some of them, you know, would drink with me and stuff like that. But most of the time, like, a lot of them would, you know, it would be a very typical high schooler where maybe once in a while they might have to go to a party, you know. But then they'd start wondering, like, why you go out all the time? It's all you do in a week, you know. And I remember one guy, I called him, and there's like a Tuesday. And he had a fake ID, and at that point I didn't have one. And so I, you know, was like, come on, let's go get some beer and get drunk. And he said, dude, it's Tuesday, I got homework to do. And I was like, so what? You know, and it's like, you can do it later, you know, or maybe just buy the beer for me, and then you can go home. And he wouldn't let me, you know, so I pretty much stopped spending time with him. The only time I would ever try to talk to him is if I didn't have access to alcohol. I would call him up and try to get him to buy, you know, to buy for me. And, the weird thing is, I mean, I haven't taken a legal drink in my life, but yet I still managed to get drunk every day, for a couple years there. And, I'm not really sure how it worked out. I just was pretty good, pretty clever at being able to get my hands on alcohol. And, so, you know, like I said, one by one, friend, you know, any kind of meaningful friends, not that I had many, but there was a few, you know, that I just slowly dropping out of my life, just because, you know, anybody who ever cared about me obviously would start questioning my alcohol, the amount that I drank and how often, and anything about it. Anybody said anything, and I didn't care about them anymore. And so it started getting pretty lonesome, you know. And like I said, it's not like I was physically alone. I mean, there was plenty of guys that were in my area that drank just like I did, and, you know, maybe they're alcoholic, I don't know. But they certainly enjoyed spending every day of their lives drinking just like I did. And so there were still people that I would spend time with, but I didn't have any kind of meaningful, you know, all those meaningful relationships were gone. You know, so I started getting really lonesome. And by the time I was about 16, 17, I started getting even more depressed and just miserable. And that's kind of when it started to really get miserable for me. And just because if I was sober, I hated life. I couldn't take it. And like I said, I had nothing on the outside to say why. I mean, you know, I didn't have, like, divorced parents to try to blame my depression on. I didn't have, like, a bad upbringing to blame it on or anything. I mean, it was all, I mean, I guess intuitively I knew it was self-inflicted. But yet, you know, if I didn't have any booze in me, I couldn't smile. It just wasn't happening. And then the moment I take a drink, all of a sudden, you know, I wouldn't be able to wipe the smile off my face. I felt so good. And actually, a lot of times it was like on the way to a big beer, I'll just start feeling better. It would just kind of give me that, like, ease on the inside, you know, because I knew I was going to get some. So I knew I was going to feel better soon. Continuing on like that, there was a, I forget exactly how old I was. I think it was somewhere around, I think I was about a sophomore in high school, and I got, it was when I was swimming for my high school, and I frequently would drink before swim practice or swim meets or anything, just because, I mean, I swam better if I drank a little bit. I mean, it was just like everything else. I was better at something if I drank, and quite honestly, I think I was, because it would loosen me up. I wasn't worried about what people thought about me. I would just go out, you know. I mean, I usually wouldn't end up getting hammered or anything like that, but I would certainly have a bit to drink before going, and it would just, you know, like I always justified it as I would loosen me up, I'd feel better, and I wouldn't hurt myself or whatever it was, you know, whatever the reason happened to be at that moment. But where we swam, or our swim practice was at this rec center, not at my high school, you know, it was a rec center close by my house. And I got a 40 of something and drank it, and one of the employees at this place happened to walk through the parking lot and saw me, and he didn't say anything to me, but just when I went inside, my coach, you know, pulled me aside, and he, you know, asked me about it, and then smelled breath, and then told me to get out, so I was kicked off the team, and he didn't want me back on, and he'd already didn't like me anyways because of the way my attitude towards him, and mostly because, you know, going to swim practice was like, you know, prime drinking time, you know. It's not like it certainly hurt my feelings that I wasn't on the swim team anymore, because I'd stopped caring, you know. Because it was considered a field trip for my school, so I got suspended from school and had to go to Fairfax County's like drug and alcohol awareness class or something like that. It was like a 3-day class, and it was not like it was rehab or anything like that. It was just kind of like an education thing. And looking around the room, a lot of these kids had gotten caught with drugs and all this stuff. And hearing what they had been doing, it's like I was definitely by far way worse than any of these kids were. And these were supposedly like the bad kids in school or something like that. And not that I was like necessarily a bad kid in school, but just my life revolved around alcohol. You know, I got out of that, and I went back to school, and it didn't, you know, once faze me or like that. Shortly thereafter, I got caught, that's right, it was the week afterwards. We'd already had a trip scheduled to go up to Seven Springs to go skiing with our church group, or my parents' church group, the kids or whatever. So I went there, brought booze, of course, I got caught by the security guards there, I remember that night, my mom, she sat, we were in, like, her bathroom, just, it was the only, like, place that was away from other people, she was, you know, just having, like, it was one of those moments where, because I certainly didn't want to be mean or terrible or jerk to my parents, but it just kind of the way it happened, you know, and it was one of those moments where, you know, it was like having like a heartfelt moment with my mom, I think I was even crying. I don't know if it was necessarily real, but it certainly, I was certainly being sincere as much as I could. And, you know, the fact that I was, you know, because I knew I wasn't being a good son, or I didn't know the level of how bad I was, but I certainly didn't know. I knew that, you know, I certainly didn't treat him very well, especially for the way that they treated me. You know, they gave me all the love that they possibly could, and I just spat on their face. But then the next week, or like as soon as I got back, I mean, it's not like I stopped drinking, but I went right back to it, shortly thereafter, I got caught at school for smoking, so I got suspended again, and I had to do this smoking seminar thing, in that moment, I decided, okay, I'm going to stop, lay off for a little bit, get the heat off me, so I went about like 2-3 months, didn't drink, didn't do drugs, didn't do anything. Well, I kept smoking, but I certainly didn't do any drugs or drinking or anything like that. And then it was prom night, and I ended up going. Afterwards, we went to one of the prom parties, me and my date, and and somebody pulled out a bottle of Bacardi 151. I was like, well, I gotta try some. I mean, you know, I can't not, you know. So I got drunk that night, and then from then, you know, then I started right back to it. I was daily drinking again. It was, you know, as if I hadn't even stopped for 3 months. You know, and that was like the only period of my whole drinking that I had like taken a break, you know, and not because like I thought I was an alcoholic and I needed to stop and I was trying to prove to myself an alcoholic. It was just purely just, I just was trying not to get in trouble anymore. And, but, you know, right after that is when I stopped caring about whether I got in trouble or not. You know, I mean, if I got caught by the police, it'd be one thing, but I somehow skated by that one every time the police showed up. You know, most time I certainly didn't like going to parties. I liked to drink with me, like by myself or with a couple other people. You know, I didn't like the big parties. They were just too much commotion and too many people taking the beer from me, you know. And so so I didn't like going to them. Usually I would go to them and try to steal a case or two of beer and leave, you know, just so I could have my own supply. And I ended up you know, just kind of living this depressive life. And that's, you know, my last year of my drinking. I mean, I got sober at 18, and, you know, from 17 to 18 was definitely the worst. And just in the, not so much in the outside, but more just in the inside. That's when it really started to crumble. I mean, it was already bad, you know, miserable and all stuff, but that's when I started getting suicidal. And, I never actually, like, took any action towards it. I just would think about it all the time, you know, and so and this is where I know that alcohol was definitely my savior, because the only thing that kept me from ever wanting to try it was I knew that, because I would think about it, and I'd be, like, thinking about, like, if I, you know, if I should go get something to kill myself with, and then I'd be like, well, I can go out tonight and get drunk, and I can do it tomorrow. And, like, it'd be like that every day, you know, just be constant, like, if I was sober, I'd be thinking about it, and then I'd realize, well, I'll get a couple beers, and I'll think about it then. And, as soon as I had a couple beers, it was, like, instantaneously I felt better, and I, you know, then it was like, well, didn't even remember that I was thinking about suicide just, like, a couple hours before that. You know, honestly, alcohol at that point was my saving grace. I mean, I really think that was the only thing that kept me alive long enough to get here, everything started to crumble, and that's when the relationship with my parents went completely south, where I didn't talk to them anymore. I mean, I was still living in their house, but I didn't talk to them anymore. And if we were talking, it would be like I'd walk in, my dad would ask me how I was doing, I'd tell him to F off, and I'd go to my room, and then I'd be like, well, I don't even know why I'm here, and I'd leave. And then the relationships with my friends, I mean, any of the meaningful friends that were already gone, and all I had left was a couple guys that drank just as heavy as I did. And so my last year was pretty miserable and pretty lonely. And just, you know, and I was failing out of school, and I didn't have anything going for me, you know. The only thing I had, I mean, I didn't have much, like, physical stuff. I mean, I didn't have a wife and kids and, like, cars and all this stuff that I would have given away. But I certainly gave away every, you know, at that point, everything good and decent in my life had already given away. And the only thing physical I had left was a car, and it was my mom's car. So it wasn't really my car. It was, I would just take it from her. But but the last 6 months, that's when it, you know, certainly was even worse. And that's when I started to get to the point where I didn't know if, I mean, I didn't think about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't think about I was an alcoholic. I didn't think about any of that stuff. It was never really brought up to me. So it wasn't, like, on my mind of, like, I should check out AA or anything like that. But I definitely knew, I guess I instinctively knew that I couldn't go on much longer like this, you know. Because when you're drinking nonstop, you know, with an occasional break every once in a while, and you're 17, you know, then... I guess I knew at that point that it certainly wasn't right the way I was living. And at that point I'd given up all drugs too. I did plenty of drugs when I was younger, but at that point it was just straight up alcohol. And it was the only thing that actually put a smile on my face. Everything else was kind of like whatever to me. And alcohol was number one for me. One day, my mom, I guess, got fed up with me taking the car all the time, so she bought her own car, and so I got the car finally, and that was great. And I had it for a whole week, and then the end of the week, I I was out with those guys, the drank just as heavy as I did, and it was just like any other day where, you know, we got up at noon and started drinking, and by about 1:30 that morning, we were starting to run out of alcohol, and we were starting to get bored, didn't have much to do, and, you know, slowly started to sober up, too, and I was driving, and one of the guys in the car was like, see how fast we can go, and this is a Ford Taurus, like a 1996 Ford Taurus, so certainly not like a race car, and so I got up to about, I was down to one of the back roads in Great Falls, and I don't know if any of you have been around there, but it's like lots of woods and trees, and it's not exactly safe to be going very fast, but there's one area where it's about like two or three miles where like you can see straight, and you can see the whole way, and so I got up to about like around 110, 120 miles an hour, somewhere in there, and that's when I got scared, because the car started, you know, like feeling like it was going to shake apart, and so I let off the gas, and then as soon as I let off the gas, all of a sudden I saw brake lights right in front of me, and so I smashed into this car, doing somewhere around 100 miles an hour, and and the funny thing is, it was a girl that I went to high school with, and I actually had kind of a crush on, so it kind of ruined that one, but I didn't kill it. not that I had much of a chance in the first place, because I was pretty, you know, disgusting, because I didn't shower much, I didn't take care of myself, or even care about other people, for that matter, so, but somehow, I mean, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't injure anybody. The only injury was me. I sprained my ankle because I put my foot on, like, a brake pedal, but not, like, all the way. So it went like this and twisted. And that was the only injury out of this accident. Both cars completely destroyed. You know, like I said, we've been drinking all day, and plenty of that time was in the car. So there was plenty of beer cans and bottles and all stuff in the car. And so these guys, and then luckily, well, not exactly luckily, but we were in the woods, so it was really dark out. And so the guys in my car, you know, they threw out all the alcohol, all the evidence, and they threw it out in the woods. And when I went up to the, you know, I went and talked to the girl, and then, but she'd already called the cops, you know, and I was like, damn it. The cops showed up, and they kind of looked at the cars, and then they came and asked me, and they asked, the first thing the guy asked me was, have you been drinking tonight? And of course I told him no. And but then he shined his flashlight on my car, and the last beer can in the car was right there on the dash, right there for him to see. And I was like, okay, so maybe I've had a little bit, you know. And so I ended up having to do breathalyzer and everything, and got caught and got a DUI that night. Because I sprained my ankle, I mean, they took me to the jail and got the official breathalyzer or whatever, but I was like a month shy of 18, so they didn't keep me overnight. They called my parents, my dad, and I guess this is one of those moments just showing me, now looking back on it, how much he cared, because the way I treated them, you know, I mean, thinking about it, if somebody treated me like that, then if they, you know, I got a call saying he was in jail, I would have been like, well, leave him there, you know, let him learn a lesson. But my dad came, and he came and picked me up, and because he cared that much about me, you know, he didn't want to see me destroy my life like that. But he took me to the hospital after we were on there, and I got, he prescribed me the 20 Vicodin, they put me in a splint and all that stuff, and went home, and didn't really sleep that night. But the next day, by the afternoon the next day, I had already finished all 20 Vicodin, and I was drinking on top of it, and because I did, like I said, I didn't have one thought of like, oh no, that was a bad thing, I should stop drinking. And because look at it now, anybody that I know that's at least half what normal would say, I probably shouldn't drink, or at least for a while, maybe I shouldn't drink, you know. But I, you know, went right back to it, and I continued drinking, and just as hard as I could, hobbling around on crutches, drinking is always interesting, but I didn't take one breather throughout all that, it didn't even dawn on me that I had almost killed 6 people. Didn't even cross my mind. I thought about it after I got sober, but at that point, you know, it was like, you know, the only thing I was bummed out about was that I lost my car, you know, that I only had for a week, you know, so then all of a sudden I didn't have a car and I had to be around on crutches, you know, it was like, poor me, you know, rather than look what I've done, you know. Obviously I ended up going to court for that DUI, and it was like 2 or 3 months later, I forget exactly how long, but I ended up having to get ASAP program in Virginia, and at that point it was just 4 classes, like you went for an evaluation with a counselor, and then you had to do these 4 classes, and I think nowadays it's like like 6 month ordeal or something. I don't know. But either way, I went for this evaluation thing with this counselor, and she gave me like this like test essentially. It was just like a bunch of questions of how much I drank and drugs and whatever, you know, asked, trying to get all these intimate details about how much I partied and drank and all this stuff. And so of course, like any good alcoholic, I certainly didn't tell any kind of truth on there. You know, it was like, this was, you know, one of the few times I've ever drank, and it just happened to be a bad time, you know, one of those things. And but about 2 weeks later, it was something like two weeks later, I was, it was ended up being my last night of drinking, and I didn't know it at the time, but I, it was actually probably one of the worst times of my drinking, and not because I drank so much and did so much terrible things, but because it was one of the first times that I couldn't get my hands on anything all day, and I was screaming on the inside. I was losing it, because at that point, I mean, I didn't go through full-on blown, like, DTs when I got sober, but I certainly had some signs of alcohol addiction because of it. But I, so, you know, I was definitely had the shakes and the sweats, and I was so angry, and I was stuck with this one guy. Neither of us had a car. I destroyed mine, and he just never had one, and so I kept trying to get rides from people somewhere, and we'd randomly get a ride somewhere, but it wouldn't be anywhere near alcohol, and so it went all day, and I was, you know, dying on the inside, and somewhere around 11:30 at night, I finally got this guy to take us to a grocery store, and I stole a couple bottles I stole like 4 22s of Ice House beer, and I drank a couple of them, and that was not my last drink, and I drank a couple of them, and then I ended up going home, and I guess it was just enough to help me to sleep a little bit that night, and then next morning I woke up, and my oldest brother, who was living in North Carolina at the time, was there, randomly showed up, and so I thought it was a little funny, but I didn't think much of it. I just thought I just hadn't paid attention when my parents told me that he was coming up or something like that. But my parents and my brother and his wife sat me down and told me that I had 2 hours to decide whether I was going to jail or rehab, and I had being court ordered, so it was one or the other, and there was no other choice. So, you know, of course, I didn't want to go to jail, so I went to rehab, and I ended up going to this rehab up in Pennsylvania, and I was supposed to only be there for the 28 days, but I ended up spending, you know, 3 months there, which I guess isn't that long compared to some people who have been for even longer than that, but I remember, when I first went, I mean, that was the first time I'd been sober in a couple of years at that point. It was like two plus years at that point that I'd been sober for a day. And, so I was starting to definitely feel the effects of not having alcohol, you know, the first couple of weeks there. I mean, it was definitely going through, you know, like I said, I didn't go through DTs, but I certainly had some signs of alcohol withdrawal from it, you know, just the shakes and the sweats and just, you know, not feeling good and just miserable. I mean, I think only alcoholics understand the idea of the misery that comes with that. You know, just all of a sudden, the only thing that ever made me feel better was no longer there. All of a sudden, I was supposed to be talking to people about my feelings. And, you know, and it's not certainly not something I ever cared about or wanted to do. But I remember it was about 2 weeks in. I was roomed up with this guy who snored terribly, and you know, normally I didn't have much problem sleeping, but then again, I normally was, you know, like passing out rather than sleeping. So, he was snoring like crazy, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep, and I was losing it, and I was crying like crazy, and it was one of those like really bad cries, you know, like snot dripping, and just like, oh, I couldn't take it. And I think in that moment is when I had my first surrender, where I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. Because, fortunately, this rehab was, like, 12-step based, you know, where they were, bringing in meetings and having people talk from outside about, you know, about alcoholism and drug addiction and all that stuff. So, you know, like, some of the stuff they were talking about started to kind of make sense. And I don't think at that point I quite wanted to really, really believe it, but I certainly it started to make sense for me, you know, like as to why I was living the life I was living. And and so, you know, and I certainly tried to, play the game and try to be, you know, Mr. I was like, okay, I'm going to be Mr. AA here and try to get out. And so my counselor thought I was doing so great that she wanted to keep me for longer, you know, so that's why I stayed for 3 months. And since I was court ordered, it's not like I could decide, you know, I mean, I could have walked out if I wanted to, but then they scooped me up and put me in jail. So I knew I couldn't leave. But when I finally got out, I was fortunate enough that one of the guys I had been drinking with that I had known for years, he had actually gotten sober about 2 years before I did. And so he was going to meetings, and so when I got out, I mean, our parents, of course, talked because they knew. Our parents talked, and so, I got hooked up with him and started going to meetings with him. Unfortunately, that guy's not sober any longer, but the last I heard of, he's actually doing fairly good. So I don't know whether he's alcoholic or not, but certainly saved my life because, when I got out, I started immediately going to meetings and meeting people and starting to realize that there was life beyond alcohol. Because I certainly was, I imagine pretty much everybody who gets sober first time starts thinking, like, well, what do you do if I just get sober, you know? Because for me, I mean, like I said, the only thing I ever did was drink. I didn't do anything else. Just the only thing I knew to, like, have fun, to do anything, you know, it was like, I didn't go much places. I just would go to, like, basements or sit in my car and drink or somewhere lonely and drink, you know, and it's like the only thing I knew how to do. And so, I got hooked up with these people and started going to meetings and I ended up getting a sponsor and I stayed sober. And honestly, I've been sober since then. I'm not one of those people who's been like a chronic slipper or anything like that, but my first 2 years was definitely, interesting just in the, because at that point, you know, I hadn't decided that I was alcoholic. I hadn't, like, had a real first step. And, that, you know, it says in the book that we came to Alcoholics, or beaten by alcohol, we came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and here's where we found out the true fatal nature of the malady. And it was certainly my case, but, it always took a while for me. It took 2 years into sobriety where I really conceded to myself I was an alcoholic. So up until that point, you know, I was going to meetings every day, and I was talking to a sponsor. I mean, I would say hi and say I was doing all right, you know, doing great. And then just kind of, you know, I guess the fellowship for the most part was keeping me sober, keeping me alive. Actually my first 6 months was that part I really don't know how I say it because I didn't really, you know, I met up with this guy, but the only time I ever like did anything besides sit at home and play video games was when I went to meetings with this guy, and it wasn't every night, you know, so, there was plenty of nights where I would, usually go to the meeting, I get dropped off my parents, then come home and then play video games and just be miserable. But around 6 months, one of my sponsee brothers, he was politely directed that he needed to start picking me up for meetings. So he started picking me up every day. He hated me. Well, not hated me, but he hated talking to me because I was so miserable. And all I ever talked about was my rehab knowledge and my car. Because I had, in this period, my brother thought it was a great idea to try to get me a Mustang so he could help me fix it up as like something, like a good thing for me to do, you know. One of his ways to try to help me do better. But it was broken down, and I didn't do anything to fix it. I just complained about it. That's all I had. That's all I had brought to the table, you know. So he was like, okay. So he started picking me up, and thank God he did, because he started picking me up every day and taking me to meetings, and I started to, you know, being forced into having to be around, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to. Eventually, I ended up moving out of my parents' house and living with some guys in sobriety, that was another great time where I really started to, you know, it was harder to isolate and be by myself when I was living with a bunch of people that were also going to meetings. And, you know, if I wasn't there, they'd be like, where the hell were you? You know, that kind of a thing. So, but it's still in the back of my head. I was still really questioning whether I was alcoholic or not, you know. I kept thinking, like, I was so young. I was, you know, and just like a typical alcoholic fashion where, it was hard to remember all the terrible things that had happened in my life, the facts about me being an alcoholic just didn't really show up. You know, I just couldn't think about it. It just wouldn't come into mind, you know, or if they did, it was like, well, that wasn't really that bad, you know? And so, that first years, I mean, I ended up doing a fourth and fifth step, and I didn't lie on it. I didn't like try to fake it or anything like that. I'm not really sure I guess I didn't really think about lying on it. I just kind of did it. And but it didn't have any kind of meaning to me, and I certainly didn't really have any kind of understanding of... I mean, I had a God, I guess, but I didn't really understand the concept of, like, giving my life and my will over to Him. You know, and so a lot of this, you know, a lot of things we do in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't really mean much to me, but I was miserable, and but coming to meetings and being around these people was better than what I had, so I kept coming, but right around 2 years of sobriety is when, you know, just that, the pain of not having a drink and not having a spiritual way of life really started to hit me, and that's when it, you know, finally dawned on me that I was definitely an alcoholic, and there was no doubting it anymore. And so I finally conceded to myself that I was an alcoholic. And so from that moment on is when I started to really actually practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and that's when I ended up changing sponsors at that point to my current sponsor now. And, he's definitely walked me through a lot. And just, you know, I didn't like redo all this other stuff. I just, at that point is when I started to realize, like, what the fourth and fifth step were about, and what, like, the sixth and seventh, you know, I just started to understand more of this stuff, and so the book started to make more sense, you know, because it started to relate to me rather than just something I was reading, you know, and, at that point is when I really started to kind of better my relationship. I mean, I already started to better my relationship with my parents, but the fact that I wasn't drinking and I wasn't screaming at them and I wasn't, you know, being a total jerk to them. But I, you know, I was constantly calling them for money. I was, you know, I would go like a while without calling them. You know, it wasn't like, it was certainly better than how I was before, but it certainly wasn't like a real son should be, you know. And so it took a while for that one to really start to get better in that sense. But they were at least happy and that I wasn't acting the way I was when I was drinking. And honestly, in sobriety is when I really started to understand the gravity of how I had treated them. And that's when I found out about that all those nights that I didn't come home, all those times that I would show up at home, but I was completely hammered and wasted. You know, my parents were just wondering, you know, they couldn't sleep at night because the only thing they would think about was worrying about me and worrying about whether they're going to phone call from the cops saying I was locked up or I was dead or something, you know. And And that never crossed my mind when I was out there drinking. You know, when my parents first told me that, I mean, that was definitely like a, whoa, you know. You know, I thought that I didn't hit them. I didn't, you know, it felt like I wasn't that bad. I was just kind of mean to them, you know, so it didn't seem like it was that big a deal. But the fact that my dad, I mean, had to work like 16 to 18 hour days sometimes just to keep his business going so that he could help provide for his kids. And then he couldn't sleep at night either because I wouldn't come home and I would, you know, so he would go weeks on end where he wouldn't get much sleep at all. And, the same thing for my mom, you know, just now, you know, I guess it was like in hindsight, looking back and I realizing that like the way treating him like that was pretty, you know, certainly a lot worse than I had originally thought of, you know. And so I, you know, plus the fact that I just didn't allow my parents to be parents to me. You know, I didn't allow them to love me, which, you know, when I was drinking that, you know, if I had found that out, I wouldn't have cared. But now I realize, you know, that's, you know, just, I guess that's like probably one of the worst things you can do to a parent, you know. And so I've, you know, fortunately been, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been allowed to start repairing that relationship, you know. And I mean, it's certainly going to be an ongoing process with them, and be able to, I mean, not that it's like still strained, but just the fact that I have to continue being a son. And and same thing with my brothers. I mean, in my brothers, the relationship was never really that destroyed. I mean, because they were out of the house and I wasn't around. I just didn't talk to them much. And so nowadays, I mean, I try to communicate a little more, but neither of them are very communicative type people. So it's kind of a, you know, we catch up every once in a while. But I was definitely one of those people when I first got sober here, and a lot of people talk about, you know, they got drunk and they got sober and then life started getting really great. And it didn't seem to make much sense because I felt miserable when I was sober. But, you know, now I understand what they were actually talking about is the fact that after you work the program Alcoholics Anonymous, life starts to get really good. And not to say that, like, you know, sad things happen or bad things happen, but just the fact that I guess I've been able to experience what it talks about where it says, you know, we'll be able to match calamity with serenity. And just the fact that you know, I no longer have to take a couple drinks to get that peace and ease on the inside. You know, I have that feeling without taking a drink. I mean, I haven't taken a drink in almost 9 years. And so, and at this point, I stand here, I actually think I feel better than when I was drinking, just because of the fact that I'm not, I don't have, you know, in the back of my head, I don't have all this, like, chaos that's going on, you know. So I guess I've started to understand what they were really talking about, the fact that once I could start staying sober and trying to work the program Alcoholics Anonymous, that I can actually... Actually, I really like where it talks about in Vision for You, where it talks about where we be able to recreate our lives. And that was certainly my case, because like I said, I mean, I didn't have much coming in here. I didn't have much going for me, but I've been able to, because I've stayed sober and be able to, like, listen to a sponsor and start trying to take the right actions. I mean, I didn't go to school when I got out of high school. I went to, like, a trade school and became a mechanic, but I started to be able to, like, pay my own bills and you know, trying to be somewhat of an adult, and then ended up buying a house with my, well, this was with my dad's help, but this was one of those, like, he wanted to help me, so I let him, you know. It was like he wanted to give me money to help me buy a house, but it wasn't me asking for it, it was because he wanted, because he knew it would be a good thing for me. And so he was like, okay, I'll let him be a dad, you know. And that was one thing that, like, didn't quite make sense to me. I thought I was taking it from him, but, you know, my sponsor pointed out that it was my dad wanted to give me the money because he wanted me to be better, you know. And so I started to understand that idea that my parents, all they wanted, I guess it's just the seeing that my parents were one of the most unselfish people I've ever met in my life. And they're just naturally like that. You know, I'm certainly not like that. I have to have a sponsor being reminding me that I'm being an idiot constantly, and then realizing, oh yeah, okay, maybe I'm not thinking about other people, I'm just thinking about me. And they just have it naturally, you know. So it's kind of amazing just how normal they are in that respect, you know, that to them, to be unselfish is completely normal. You know, it's like how you're supposed to live life. But I, you know, I've also been privileged to, I have a 2-year-old son. I was privileged to have that aspect. And, I got a wife, a beautiful wife, and, like, a lot of nice things on the outside, you know, like I said. And honestly, none of that stuff seemed possible for me when I was drinking. I mean, like I said, I was miserable. I didn't have many girlfriends when I was drinking, because, you know, not very attractive when you don't shower much and you don't do much else besides drink. You know, it's not like I had many girlfriends. Actually, I forgot to say, I had one girlfriend that time period when I was sober, those 3 months, I had a girlfriend there. But that one ended about, like, a week or two after I started drinking again, because, you know, I became me again where I started drinking again. And but just the fact that I was able to privileged to be that, and just the idea that, like, knowing that if I continued on drinking, I certainly wouldn't be anybody who would be possible of being, like, a father. That's certainly a time where I realized, like, how selfish I really am, even today, you know. Because all of a sudden I have to take care of somebody who cannot take care of himself. And it's not because he doesn't want to, it's because he can't, you know. And I have an agenda. I want to do this and this, and I, you know, he needs to go to bed now because I have to do something, whatever. And he doesn't want to, and I get mad at him. But then, yet, I forget about the fact that he's a kid, and he entirely depends on me for him to be able to survive. And so, for me to get mad at him for being exactly how he's supposed to be is pretty selfish. You know, it's pretty. So, I'll catch myself sometimes getting angry at him, and I'll, you know, and I'll remind myself of that, and I'll tell my sponsor, and he'll be like, you're a selfish idiot, you know. And so there's been a lot of, like, nice things that happened in my life, but you know, those things, like I said, are really nice, but they're not why I stay sober. I mean, I stay sober because of that peace and ease on the inside, you know. And I mean, that was the one thing. That's why, you know, today I don't really think I was a drinker because I was a drinker. I was drinking because I felt miserable, and drinking fixed that. And I mean, I certainly enjoyed drinking. I was one of the people who certainly liked the taste of beer and alcohol. I mean, I know a lot of people didn't, but I loved it. But I guess I loved every aspect of alcohol, and I guess I technically still do. But I don't like the consequences and just how miserable and terrible my life becomes because of it. And so, but like I said, that peace and ease on the inside, and just the fact that the fact that my parents could tell me that they're happy for me and they're proud of me, and I mean, that's another good thing. Just not like I'm necessarily a heartfelt moment person, but just, you know, when they first told me that, it was like, wow, I haven't heard them tell me that in years, you know? So just, you know, because I guess that's the thing that I really look at now. I mean, when I first got sober, it was certainly like the outside things that I was kind of looking forward to. I was like hoping to be able to like have like a lot of money and a lot of cars and whatever, you know? But now, I mean, you know, those things are nice, but I don't really care about it as much. You know, I care about the fact that I can feel comfortable on the inside. I can stand up here and not be running out the door because I'm worried about what you guys are thinking about. And always just be so shy and not be able to say hi and not knowing what to do with my hands. And, you know, every aspect that comes along with that, you know. And so, so if I hadn't found Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know where I would be. But I certainly wouldn't be at the place I am now. And then, you know, I don't know if I'll be dead or still drinking. I don't know. I don't really particularly care. I just know that the life I have today is certainly not possible when I was drinking. And hopefully I don't forget. Hopefully I don't forget that. And so I guess I'm ending a few minutes early, but that's all I got. So thanks.